Today on CityCast Chicago, the political corruption trial of former Alderman Ed Burke begins this morning. He spent more than 50 years in office, making him Chicago's longest serving alder before he decided not to run in this year's election. WTTW's Heather Sharone is here to break down Burke's long controversial career and the criminal trial that could ultimately define it. It's Monday, November 6th. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is What Chicago's Talking About. Welcome back to CityCast Chicago.
I'm so glad to be here.
Heather, I feel like we have been circling the drain on this story for years. The FBI raided Burke's office a whole start of a pandemic ago, and now we're finally at the point of the trial getting to start. But can you remind CityCast listeners, what exactly is Ed Burke on trial for? I think people throw corruption around so much in Illinois and Chicago that we got to make sure we're specific. What exactly is he charged with?
So he is facing 14 counts of pretty much every flavor of corruption that you can think of. He is accused of using his elected office to force those who needed something from City Hall to hire his private law firm. Now, his private law firm specialized in property tax appeals. So if you own property in Cook County, you can either pay what the Cook County treasurer says you owe, or you can say, look, I don't think my property is worth that much. I should be able to pay less. And there are lawyers whose whole job it is to get people sort of breaks on these taxes. And that's what Ed Burke specialized in. So he is accused in several schemes, essentially, of going to people who needed stuff from the city of Chicago and saying, look, I can help you with that, but I would really feel more positive about it if you hired my law firm. And the government is going to allege, and they're going to attempt to prove, that this was essentially a pay-to-play scheme, and that if you were somebody who needed a permit or a sign or a subsidy, if you didn't play ball with Ed Burke, you didn't get service from the city of Chicago. And that, they say, is corruption. If he's convicted, the standard sort of penalties for these crimes are decades in prison. He is not going to spend decades in prison, even if he is convicted on all of these charges. He is 80 years old. He has no other criminal record. And judges tend to look at both of those things and recommend significantly shorter prison sentences across the board.
So Ed Burke had faced a number of allegations throughout his multiple decades in office. But what is the case that brought the feds in like vultures this time around? Because they had asked him some questions over the years, but never enough to substantiate 14 charges.
Right. So the difference, we think, in this case is former Alderman Danny Solis. So Danny Solis was a very powerful alderman in his own right at City Hall. He was chair of the zoning committee, which gets to tell developments, yes, you can build a skyscraper here. No, you can't. Yes, you can build this there. No, you can't. So he had a lot of power. And what we understand is that he got himself into some hot water, and he ended up sitting across the table from a bunch of feds who were looking to send him to jail for a not insignificant amount of time for, as he has admitted in court, for taking bribes from developers in return for official actions. But instead, Danny Solis became a government informant, and he didn't just become any government informant. He became the super government informant of all time. The U.S. Attorney's Office says he is the most prolific and impactful government informant ever in the Northern District of Illinois, and that is no small feat. And so he went on to record Ed Burke and former House Speaker Michael Madigan, who will go to trial in April. And the government alleges that he caught them doing both all sorts of crimes, but without sort of Danny Solis flipping on Ed Burke, I don't think we would see Ed Burke sitting in the defendant's chair.
I mean, in this mountain of tapes that they have, what alleged schemes is the jury going to be hearing about specifically?
It involves a Burger King and the old post office, which is the giant building you drive under if you leave, as you leave downtown and get on the Eisenhower going west. And essentially, the Burger King is where the owners of that restaurant simply wanted to renovate the place, right? Nobody wants to eat in an old Burger King with ripped up seats and that sort of thing. But they needed the city's permission to change the driveway. And because they're in the 14th Ward, which was what Ed Burke represented for 54 years, they needed his sign off on it. And he is alleged to have said, look, you want this permit, I want you to hire my firm to do property tax appeals for your company, which owned a bunch of Burger Kings. So that would be very lucrative, ostensibly, for Ed Burke's law firm. Now, the old post office is a little bit more complicated, and this is where Danny Solis gets into the mix. The old post office had been sitting vacant for a long time, and a firm comes along and says, look, let's redevelop the old post office. We need a lot of new office space in downtown Chicago. It's going to be great, but we need a city subsidy. Well, city subsidies have to go through Ed Burke's finance committee. So Danny Solis and Ed Burke sort of came together to say, look, they need a zoning change. That means Danny Solis has got to sign off on it. And they need a subsidy. So that means Ed Burke has got to get on board. Well, maybe we can try to figure out to get some money for us both. And that is what the feds say they captured on thousands of tapes and thousands of phone calls. And that's the bulk of what the jury is expected to hear once this trial gets underway.
Let's back up a little bit, Heather, because there's so many charges on the table. And for a lot of people, they've heard this man's name likely throughout their entire lives. He was an alder throughout my mother's entire life. Can we talk about how did Burke rise to power in the 14th Ward and City Hall?
Well, so it is a long-standing tradition in Chicago politics that the path to power is easiest if your parents have power. Now, his dad was alderperson of the 14th Ward when he was little. Joseph Burke died young of lung cancer, and Ed Burke, who at the time was a Chicago police officer going to night school at DePaul University to get his law degree, he became first the 14th Ward committee person, so that meant that he was in charge of sort of finding people's jobs and to sort of running the Democratic Party on the Southwest side. And then he was elected to the city council. Now, he's 80 now, but back in 1968, when he was first elected to the Chicago City Council, he was one of the youngest people ever elected to the city council. So he was really sort of part of this new breed of alderperson who was represented a generational change. And he really wanted to sort of inherit what at that point was the Daley machine. And he was very close with Richard J. Daley. He was sort of a foot soldier in that sort of machine. And he used that sort of entree into politics to start climbing the ladder. When he ran headfirst into the juggernaut that was former Mayor Harold Washington.
That is where I first came to know of Ed Burke's name and his legacy, because he was one of the alders leading the opposition to Harold Washington, you know, cutely called the council wars. I'd call sort of a racist coup inside of the city council. Heather, this is just one of the many high or low lights, however you choose to look at it, over his 54 years in the council. Can you describe that saga, but also some of Burke's other, notable moments?
So he and another elder person, Edvard Doliak, were...
The Ed brothers
were furious when Harold Washington managed to defeat not just Jane Byrne, the former mayor, but also Richard M. Daley, Richard J. Daley's son, and become Chicago's first black mayor. They saw his election as a direct threat to the political power that until that point had really been enjoyed by Chicago's white ethnic communities. And they did not want Harold Washington to succeed. And they did everything they could to thwart him. They refused to ratify his committee chairs. They opposed everything he put to the city council. And it wasn't until 1986, nearly 3 years after Harold Washington was elected, that Harold Washington was able to sort of consolidate his power over the city council and start moving things through the city council. Now, of course, he was reelected in 1987, and he died just in about a year later in office, which sort of allowed Richard M. Daley to come back to power. This time with a power-sharing agreement with his friend/nemesis, Ed Burke, who wanted to be mayor, didn't get there, lost to the Daily Scion, and settled for control of the Finance Committee, which was the purse strings of the city of Chicago. And in that role, he sort of served as, you can think about it as kind of like a vice mayor. He led the legislative branch of the city. And it's really hard to convey just how much power he had at City Hall before the raid by the FBI on his office. After Daley left office, he reached a power sharing agreement with Rahm Emanuel to keep his spot as Finance Committee chair. And until that first moment when we all realized that the FBI was in City Hall raiding Ed Burke's office, he was going to be there until he decided to retire. But he left under much different circumstances.
So why do you think Burke's trial is such a big deal, given our history seems to be that corruption is commonplace?
Well, I think it's a couple things. One, because for so long, Ed Burke was sort of seen as untouchable in a very similar way to House Speaker Michael Madigan, you know, that they were old school, that they did business not via email or text messages, that it was all face to face, and that if they spoke on the phone, they spoke in a code that would mean that the feds would never be able to sort of, you know, nail them for anything. And the other thing was, is that the news of this sort of investigation came from nowhere. Like, there weren't any sort of, like, dribs or drabs. When the FBI hit City Hall that day, we had no clue what was happening. So it was sort of that sort of expectation game. And it's really hard to sort of overstate just what a seismic impact that had on City Hall, because immediately Rahm Emanuel forced him to step down from his perch as Finance Committee Chair. And then a few months later, we learned that, you know, Rahm Emanuel wasn't going to run for a third term. And then it really became sort of the collateral damage of the Ed Burke scandal, because even though he was able to get reelected after being charged with the initial crimes, he made it so that corruption was the big issue in the 2019 mayoral campaign. And that was what opened the door for Lori Lightfoot to win in May 2019. So, you know, it on one hand, totally reasonable for somebody to say, what, another Chicago politician going on trial for corruption? Shocking. Who knew? But this politician is different simply because he was able to shape Chicago government for more than a half century to his whim. And then when he found himself in the crosshairs of the Department of Justice, the impact of those charges just had massive and far-reaching changes that we're still sort of grappling with today in Chicago politics.
At this point, it seems like your only options for getting kicked out of city council is you retire, you die, or you lose an election. Ed got to leave. Maybe he would have lost this last election, but we never saw that. He got to leave. Are there no ways to get an alderperson out?
So Ed Burke used to love to tell reporters back when he would hold court with reporters that there were three ways to leave the Chicago City Council: the ballot box, the pine box, or the jury box. Mm-hmm. Now, Ed Burke defied sort of that cliche, because you're right, he didn't run again, but he was a savvy enough politician to know that the writing was on the wall, because the 14th Ward was no longer the ward that he had represented for decades. It was now nearly 90% Latino. It was no longer inclusive of sort of the whiter parts of the ward, where the wealthier people who had voted for him for decades would be likely to vote for him again. So not only was he facing sort of a whole new group of voters, but that he was also sort of confronting the fact that every dollar he spent to try to win re-election, he was not going to be able to use to spend on his defense. And I imagine that he felt like that money was better spent for his lawyers than in perhaps what was certain to be an unsuccessful, and I am sure he worried, embarrassing loss in the 2023 election.
So we know that former Alder Danny Solis is the snitch of all snitches. The feds start sniffing around and he started offering up what he knew. And so they've got so many hours of tape. What have we heard from prosecutors so far?
Well, we don't expect prosecutors to call Danny Solis to the stand. And that makes sense, because if they call Danny Solis to the stand, they are opening him up to questions about his crimes and, you know, what he did. And juries tend to not like to take the word of admitted criminals, right? Now, the defense, Ed Burke's defense lawyers, say they're going to call Danny Solis, and because they have a right to cross-examine him. But defense attorneys tend to stay a lot before trial that perhaps maybe doesn't actually happen during the trial, because Danny Solis could cut both ways for them in front of a jury. But we do know that the prosecutors are going to sort of basically try to create a picture of what they believe to be just a massive corrupt operation that Ed Burke ran out of City Hall for decades. And it's not entirely clear what Ed Burke's defense will be to sort of all of those charges, but we have heard a little bit in preliminary hearings that his lawyers are going to argue that he was a very busy man and that this is politics as usual. And if some bad stuff happened, he probably didn't really realize that because, again, very busy. And this is, again, just how politics happen. It's how the sausage gets made. Now, that is an argument that is almost exactly the same as the argument made by Alderman Patrick Daley Thompson, who was convicted a year ago. The jury in that case did not buy that at all. They took less than 4 hours to convict him, and he spent a couple of months in prison. And the question for Ed Burke is, if you have this whole history that we just talked about, where you're sort of the base of power at City Hall for decades, you are known for sort of thwarting Chicago's first Black mayor, Harold Washington, who at this point is pretty close to a political saint in Chicago, how do you at the same time argue that you were just a little bit distracted and not really paying attention, and you might have stepped in some bad stuff, but you didn't really, you know, engage with it or do any of that? That, I think, is a potentially tough argument to make to a jury. And we've seen these juries asked to examine corruption cases time and again say, look, we are tired of this as Chicagoans. We are tired of this being the way that our political officials operate. And we as a jury are going to send a message in the hope that that corruption stops at City Hall.
So if the outcome of this trial is a conviction of Ed Burke, do you think that has any impact on how City Council moves forward?
So I think simply the end of the Ed Burke era has fundamentally changed how the city council operates. So one of the first things that the city council did after Ed Burke was charged was to change the rules so that alder people can no longer work as property tax attorneys. So simply the alleged corruption scheme that Ed Burke is accused of sort of pursuing is not possible for any other alder person. They can work outside City Hall still, but they can't serve as lawyers in these sort of cases or really any other kind of case. The other issue is that there is never going to be, and I don't often make predictions, you know me, right? Like I'm usually very measured in that, but there will never be, I hope this doesn't come back to haunt me, there will never be another alder person who serves for 54 years. Politics today.
You won't even have to answer to that if that's the case.
I'll be dead. They're going to be like, Heather, come on, we got to hold you responsible for that. I think that part of the issue with Ed Burke was that the news media was very different in the 70s and in the 80s and even in the early 90s, where that alder people were given a level of deference that does not exist anymore. Now, which isn't to say that my, you know, past, you know, colleagues didn't do great work into sort of the malfeasance and the corruption that has marked City Hall in Chicago for decades. But I think there's just more of a sense that people are failable and that everybody deserves direct scrutiny in a way that perhaps I think that Ed Burke was allowed to escape in many respects, because he was very similar to many of the reporters. They were white. They were primarily men. They were primarily of sort of the same socioeconomic strata that is just not true in Chicago's news media today. Ed Burke loved to stand on the city council floor and declare people sui generis, Latin for one of a kind. And I think he really is one of a kind, for better, for worse, warts included. And I think that we're not really going to see anyone like that again, much like we're never going to see a mayor serve for 22 years like Richard M. Daley did, or 21 years like Richard J. Daley did. It's just not how things work anymore.
One of a kind, and maybe, just maybe, last of a kind. Heather Sharon, WTTW political reporter and one of our favorite guests, thank you for making time for CityCast.
I'm so glad to do it.
Before I let you go, you know I got some good news for you. The 28th Annual Asian American Jazz Fest is this Friday and Saturday at Elastic Arts in Avondale. Check our show notes for more details. Remember, tomorrow is your last day to nominate CityCast Chicago as Best Podcast and Hey Chicago as Best Email Newsletter and the Chicago Reader's Best of 2023. You know where you can find more information in the show notes, and make sure to find us under the City Life category. If I told you once, I told you six times. I'm trying to get that podcast three-peat. I'm trying to be the MJ of Chicago's podcast landscape, and I need you to help me get there. I'm going to talk to you tomorrow. Peace.